The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
All right, just took my relief factor a few minutes ago, so I'm ready and raring to go for the program. If you don't know what relief factor is, you should. If you're somebody who experiences daily pain, inflammation is really what gets us. This is a 100% drug-free, created by doctors, and its main goal is to reduce inflammation in the body. And I will tell you that I have pain that's sometimes crippling, and just a year ago couldn't live this way anymore. Out of desperation, because I don't believe in,
natural.
Really? Give me something from Dow Chemical. And it works. I've been taking it for a year now, and I have seen a great reduction in pain. It's relieffactor.com. Try it for 3 weeks. It's a quick start. 70% of the people who try it go on to order more month after month, because it works. Relieffactor.com. Get your life back. Go to relieffactor.com.
Glenn Beck.
I feel a little like I did in 2007. And for anybody who has been listening to me for a long time, you hopefully remember, what that felt like and what we don't want to face again. We are headed toward real economic trouble. And we have a window of time to accomplish an awful lot of things. Let's start with tariffageddon here. It's not going away. The tariffs, I don't know what this is, but it's not helpful. We have been so fixated on the never-ending stream of breaking news that we are not seeing now the major economic storm that is coming, and it is already over the horizon. We are in a trade war, and I don't think we've begun to see the full effects of the fallout yet. This war has just started. The bombs have barely begun to drop, and we're about to start seeing the casualties. And unfortunately, we are scrambling more fighters. Let's not forget what tariffs really are, America. They are not hurting or punishing the Chinese government. They're not. They're not hurting or punishing the European Union or Canada. They are hurting you, because tariffs actually would be more aptly described with another T word, and that is tax. It is a tax on you, and there is nothing conservative about this policy. This is about as progressive and big government as you get. Ronald Reagan said it best. Quote, government's view of the economy would be summed up in a few short phrases. If it moves, tax it. If it keeps moving, regulate it. And if it stops moving, subsidize it. When the Trump administration's tariffs hurt America's farmers, he subsidized with $12 billion in handouts. This is not the American way. They never needed a handout before this ridiculous trade war began. Now they're being forced to live off the government, to rely on the government, to continue their own business. There is nothing conservative about any of this. Now, according to the Tax Foundation, this trade war will result in nearly 300,000 jobs lost. Yesterday, General Motors, the nation's largest car company, announced dramatic downsizing, halting production at multiple plants and closing them in the U.S. and Canada. Over 8,000 white-collar jobs are being eliminated. More than 6,000 factory jobs gone. Over 14,000 people in total will lose their livelihoods. Oh, and did I mention that back in July, GM announced that the administration's trade war would cost the company $1 billion. Now let's stick with American cars for just a second. News from Tesla came out this morning. They have announced their sales in China have fallen 70%. Why? Because we're in a trade war. And China is taxing the crap out of everything American. 70% market share in the world's largest emerging market? Are we insane? Elon Musk said he's now weeks away just a few weeks away of bad sales before they close the doors. Apple also had its stock in free fall, 20% over the last 3 months. As of this morning, they lost another 2%. Why? Because the president told the Wall Street Journal that he's considering slapping a tariff on iPhones. If you want to buy an iPhone, you might want to buy one right now, because you may not be able to afford one soon. President said we can all afford an extra 10% on our iPhone. No, Mr. President, we can't. Tariffs as they stand right now are bad, but it looks like they're going to go even higher. But right now, they're costing Americans over $40 billion. That is more money than Obamacare's tax bill of $34 billion. That is $915 for every American, $2,400 per household. And if the tariffs stay in place, it will cost you $17,300 by 2030. Tariffs are a tax, and they are a tax on you. Americans are already starting to lose their jobs. Please, Mr. President, please stop with the tariffs. The workers of America are begging you, stop with the tariffs.
It's Tuesday, November 27th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
It's only going to get worse with layoffs. There's a couple of things that are going on right now. if you look, the top-selling sedans in America, the Camry, the Honda Civic, the Honda Accord, Toyota Corolla, the Nissan Altima, the Sentra, and they're all Japanese. Americans are not buying sedans anymore from GM and from American car companies. So what are they going to do? The president says you have to keep these jobs here. You better open those plants back up. Since when do we want the federal government mandating what companies do? We don't want that. So we have a problem that nobody is buying American sedans anymore. Okay, so the car companies do what they should do, and that is retool. Let's make sure we're going to concentrate on trucks and SUVs because that's what we sell. Okay, sounds like a good business plan. If I have stock in GM, I'm probably okay with this move. If I'm working at GM, I'm not cool with this move. But if I want GM to continue, I want them to cut expenses so we don't have to bail them out again or they close their doors. The problem is the largest shareholder of GM is the labor union. What are they going to do as a shareholder? What are they going to do? So American car makers can't compete and we're giving up that segment of the market. Now, more job losses are probably coming, and not from necessarily GM. But right now, we are producing 3.4 million vehicles per year than we need. We are producing too many vehicles. GM is about 1 million of that 3.2. So that means if factories run their most efficient when they're at top performance, reduce the size of the factories. Also, these steel tariffs have cost the industry billions of dollars, roughly $700 million in higher prices at GM alone. They said $1 billion. The number is probably closer to $700 million. Ford is also saying they're getting out of the car business. By 2020, Ford has said they will no longer sell the Fiesta, the Taurus, the Fusion, or Focus in North America. Only the Mustang and a crossover called Focus Active. Tesla, he says, within single-digit weeks of death, 70% decline of sales in China alone. The guy who was the CEO of Nissan that merged or tried to make the merger with Renault. He's now in jail. Fiat Chrysler struggling. Their CEO died. They never achieved the merger with GM. Volkswagen has set aside $30 billion to cover costs associated with Dieselgate. The car companies are not in good shape. So what's going to happen? Well, as we told you on this program about a year ago, we had the former chair of the board of GM on. He said GM is a different company by 2030. It's not making cars. It's making fleets. And you can call them cars. You can call them pods. But the car as we know it is going to change over the next 12 years. And GM is trying to get ahead of the curve. So now what do we do? Do we have a government that tells a private industry exactly what they have to do and what they have to make? Or do we have a private industry making the cuts that they need to make? Because we always say, why are we bailing these people out? They're too big to fail. Well, here they are saying we've got to cut or we're going to hemorrhage to death and there'll be nothing left, which would put America back in the seat of we got to bail out GM. Do you want the government designing cars? The answer is no. Do you want the government dictating how they build them, where they build them, when they build them, what they buy to build them? The answer is no. This is just the beginning, and the tariffs are not helping. In fact, they're making things much, much worse.
I would tend to agree with this. We've seen tariff rates about double since Trump took office, which is pretty amazing. I mean, really, this battle had been won. I mean, even Obama didn't try to really go crazy with. He did it a couple times, and again, same thing, failed massively. We're talking $900,000 per job, quote unquote, saved in the tire industry when he tried it with tires. But we've gone up to 3.2% from 1.6. So, I mean, we were already ahead. We already had higher tariffs before. Before Trump started all this, we had higher tariffs than places like Canada and Australia. We now have risen all the way up to about where China is. And the proposals where he wants to go, this next level of tariffs with China would put us above Mexico, more protectionist than Mexico. The policies he's proposed, if implemented, would bring us up higher than every other industrialized nation in the world. The only one really, if you want to talk about major nations that would even be competitive with us, the only ones even close to us would be Pakistan. Everything else were way, way above. The only countries that are really ahead of us are places like Bermuda and the Bahamas, isolated sort of island nations that have very specific circumstances. But again, I think these are bad policies. China also has much higher taxes than the United States. We don't want to chase their tax rates. Again, like the president's done a lot of good things, and we've brought them up a million times. The economy has been helped by some of these policies. This is the reverse of it. It's not working.
One of those times that if you support the president, you need to beg him to get off tariffs. You need to rise up and beg him to get off of tariffs. He believes this to the core of his being. It's the only thing I thought he would implement. I didn't think he would do all of the good things that he had done. I knew he would do this because this is consistent through his life.
Yeah,
he believes in tariffs.
Yeah, I mean, everyone knows that Trump is, before he got, before this last run, he had bounced back and forth between parties and things like that.
Yeah.
He never changed this position, though.
Never.
He was always very consistent on his belief that, protectionist policies when it comes to trade are a good idea.
Because he only sees winning and losing. He only sees scores. And so when you look at the quote trade imbalance, he sees that as a score. We're losing. But it's not a score. It's not.
No.
It's not a bad thing. And if you're trying to correct that, I advise him to look at the scoreboard, because the score, if you're scoring it the way he does, is getting worse.
Yeah, the trade imbalance is increasing through this time. And by the way, that is a function of his success. Donald Trump's economic policies, along with the capitalist economy in general, has been doing well. When the United States economy does well, we have a higher trade imbalance. That goes back decades. Look, the only time we've decreased in any significant way our trade imbalance over the past 30 years was the economic crisis of 2008. Our trade imbalance went all the way, almost all the way back to zero. Do we want to replicate that policy? If you look at the chart of our trade imbalance and you flip it upside down, it almost exactly matches the state of the economy. When it's exact reverse to each other. When tariffs or when trade imbalance gets quote unquote worse, we have a better economy. And when the trade imbalance gets quote unquote better, we have a worse economy. This is I mean, it's an unfortunate part of his belief system. I know he seems to really understand taxes when it comes to the economy in general in the United States. The same things are in play when you talk about globally. Well, we're getting hit with these tax increases. It's hurting the economy. And I mean, you go through and look at the numbers. They're still small enough that this doesn't have to destroy what he's accomplished. But if he keeps going down this road, it will destroy it. It's exponential when it comes to the
effect. It was a little terrifying what he said yesterday about how hard he's going to hit China. And that will mean, you know, 10 to 20% on Apple products. This is just a disaster. Yeah, you got to stop.
And he was talking about it being a negotiating tactic. He got his NAFTA renegotiation and kept all those tariffs on anyway. He just really believes this, and I don't know what's going to dissuade him of it.
All right. Our sponsor this half hour is SimpliSafe Home Security. SimpliSafe. This is the best product that you can get for your home or for your business to protect yourself, to protect your loved ones, to protect the house when you're gone all day or your business when you're gone all night. Right now, you can get a great deal for the holidays. I've never really seen them do this before, but they want to say thank you for a great run and a great 2018. SimpliSafe has come up with a special now for the holidays that I really want you to check out. Right now, if you go and get SimpliSafe, you can go to SimpliSafeBeck.com. You're going to get the special holiday offer right now. I think it's, what is it, 25% off? It's some crazy amount. The offer ends really soon, so please go to SimpliSafeBeck.com. Save on your SimpliSafe system at SimpliSafeBeck.com. Best sale of the year happening right now, SimpliSafeBeck.com. Welcome to the program. So glad that you're here. We're going to be out this weekend, Friday night. We're going to be in Tampa, Florida. You can get your tickets at glenbeck.com/tour. And then Saturday, we're going to be in Orlando, Florida. It's a great show. Glenn Beck Live, you don't want to miss it. Tampa and Orlando this weekend.
WFLA, the mothership.
The mothership, where we began.
Yeah,
where it all began.
Great story in the Tampa Bay Times today about you. I love this. Glenn Beck was set to swim with sharks. It was a stunt, the kind of the local radio DJs dream up to raise ratings or awareness of this cause or that. And at the time, that's exactly what Glenn Beck was. A talk radio host still new to Tampa Bay about to dive into a tank at the Florida Aquarium live during afternoon drive time.
So stupid.
What the heck is wrong with me? He remembers thinking. What am I doing? Because I don't like swimming. I don't like water. And I certainly don't like sharks. Then 4 days before his dive, two planes crashed into the World Trade Center. Do you remember? And this is amazing. Mm-hmm. This brings back a lot of memories. And everything changed for Glenn Beck, for America, and for especially for Glenn Beck's America.
It's true.
I mean, gosh, imagine if we could have just got you in there with the sharks, how much better everyone's life could have been.
Could have been all over.
Yeah.
We did that because, remember, at the time, shark attacks were the big news in Florida. And we're like, no, sharks are not attacking at a higher rate. This is just media hype. Blah,
one of these
blah,
stories
blah.
Every year. It's something right. like this. So, well, you remember it was clowns a couple of years ago. Remember clown scare?
Yeah. Yeah. And so we were going to do this, and it was a fundraiser for something. And you could basically bet on how many minutes I would stay in the tank with sharks. Mm-hmm. And I remember wanting to throw up for like 2 weeks beforehand. I'm like, I barely swim. I don't like water at all.
You don't seem like you'd be graceful in water.
I'm not,
just I, that's
I'm not.
A prediction.
Have you ever been around sharks?
No.
Okay, so I was in, I don't know, the Bahamas or someplace, and you can actually swim with sharks, but they're nurse sharks. Okay, now nurse sharks could break your fingers, break your hand. They don't have sharp teeth. They kind of they suck in their food.
Okay.
And so if you get your fingers by their mouth at all, they can suck them in and just crush your fingers. So they're not dangerous. They're just sharks. Mm-hmm. And they look like sharks. And I went scuba diving and was swimming. And I was down with somebody. I panicked because you realize you're not graceful. They are. You're now in their territory, and you're flopping around on the sidewalk like they would be, you know what I mean, in the air. And all of a sudden, these things start coming towards you, and you realize, there's no way I could get away from this. I'm toast. I am at the bottom of the food chain now. It's a really weird experience.
Yeah, and you have no way of doing anything.
No.
It's just no control over your own life.
And we were talking about swimming with the sharks with actual teeth.
That's a good point, that we are going back to Tampa this week for the tour.
No,
why not get you into that aquarium now?
Let's
write this wrong.
No, I don't think so.
Let's get you in there.
Grab your tickets now at glenbeck.com/tour. We'll see you in Tampa and Orlando this weekend.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. Pat Gray is joining us. I wanted to share this, guys, with you. I got this in from my sister, who saw this on a Glenn Beck group page. It said, hello all, I live in South Carolina, and I live with my mom, who has osteoporosis. My mom listens to Glenn and Pat and Stu. The boys get her through the life that she's currently living, which has been pretty hard. She has spinal fractures, and she has lost 4 inches in height.
Oof, wow.
Holy cow.
Dang.
She had a very successful cleaning business. She's always worked hard until she broke her elbow, and this isn't helping her mood at all. She sits in the house now, and she listens to Pat every morning when he comes on, and then stays glued to the TV watching Glenn. She says, like the Messiah, which I don't think is blasphemous or really inaccurate at all.
No.
If somebody could please get this post to him, leave a comment from her. She's going through a very hard time right now. But if you guys would reply, I know it would make her feel a lot better. Her name is Catherine. Catherine, we're thinking about you. I got this a couple of days ago. We've been praying for you. And you and your daughter are cherished listeners of ours. So thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for everything. Pat Gray, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm good.
Real quick, I want to preview something you had on your show today. We have coming up in hour number 3. I don't even know what this is because it's all about sports.
Have you seen the movie Concussion?
Yeah. No, I haven't seen it, but I know it.
Okay. Yeah, really. I mean, I enjoyed the movie. However, it's a pretty one-sided telling of the concussion CTE story in the NFL, and they blame the NFL for not doing what they should. Merrill Hodge, who was a running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers, he had to retire early because of concussions. And you see the title of the book,
Brainwashed,
The Bad Science Behind CTE and the Plot to Destroy Football. It's really fascinating. And he's got a really good pathologist with him who helped him write the
book. So they're debunking this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really? And you were convinced?
I mean, they don't disagree that it's a thing. They're just saying it's been blown way out of proportion.
Okay.
And that you don't know, because hundreds of people, over 100 people who are not in sports, certainly not in football, like 1-year-olds to 6-year-olds, have been diagnosed with CTE post, you know, after death. Because that's the only time you can actually, you have to open up the brain to look at it.
So you remember when I went in for studies when they were trying to figure out what was wrong with me, and one of the things the doctors came in and said, how many times have you been hit in the head? What are you doing? Mm-hmm. You've been in severe car accidents. And I'm like, no.
Oh, yeah, because your brain looked like it was concussed a lot.
And I'm like, nothing. So, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
After I'm dead, you should pick through my brain.
Right, and see if you have CTE. Yeah. I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Yeah. All right, so that's coming up in hour number 3 of this broadcast today. You don't want to miss that.
Super interesting, you don't.
So what is on? Is the border, or is it the jobs, or the tariffs? What is on your mind today?
The border's always on my mind. I think it's just an amazing situation that lied to every day, in the media about. And they just don't care. I think the media borders on treason. I think it's such a problem.
So
for
wait
them.
A minute. Wait. You were a guy who said, I don't like the rhetoric of the press is an enemy of the people.
No, right? I don't.
But you're now kind of saying
now
that?
Now saying...
Well, he said bordering. He didn't say he's bordering across the border.
I mean, they are doing...
he's climbing the fence that border.
He's climbing the fence of that border.
Yes. All right,
they are doing everything they can to deny reality.
I know. It's amazing.
Everything they can. Yeah. And to show... It's amazing. Did you guys have the reporter from MSNBC?
Yeah, let's play this real quick. Here's
unreal.
I tweeted out last night. This will be the last time you see this reporter on
for
NBC.
Sure.
Listen to what he said.
Because some people look at these images and they listen to the president who says it's not women and children, it's stone cold criminals. So my first question is, you're in that tent camp. Besides that family, give us a profile of who is there mostly and what are they looking for?
You're going to see a lot of families here, a lot of women and children. But the truth is the majority of the people that are part of this caravan, especially outside, if we can make our way all the way over there, we'll show you the majority of them are men. So this becomes a polarized political issue in the United States, you have people on one side that point and say there are women and children here. And that is true. And then there are others who point and say these are men that are trying to cross the border. And that's true, too. From what we've seen, the majority are actually men. And
the
some
majority.
Of these men have not articulated that need for asylum. Instead, they have talked about, you know, going to the United States for a better life and to find work.
It's amazing. Interesting. He actually said it three times.
Yeah.
That the majority are men. Now, I don't think anybody has ever denied that some
children.
Women and children are there. I've never denied that.
I've never denied it either.
The vast majority, however, are men.
Yeah.
And
did you hear how these men are were pushing the women and children to the front on the storming of the gates?
Yes.
They were actually pushing the women and children. It's exactly what happens with Hezbollah Hamas on the Israeli border.
Sure.
Exactly the same thing.
And the photo that you continually see when they rushed the border like that and then had tear gas canisters fired at them was a woman with two children, one on either side, both in diapers. They're 5 years old, but for whatever reason, they're in diapers. And that's the image that everybody shows to make you think, oh my gosh, they're just firing tear gas randomly at women and children. Well, every other person, if you look in the background, is a man.
Gee, I can't believe the media found the woman with the children to take the picture of. What a bad luck streak where they wouldn't capture the whole story with their picture.
It's so dishonest. And I think it's hurtful to the country.
All of it is. Have you seen any coverage on the protests in Tijuana?
What Luis Alexis Mendoza, a Mexican, said about these people. Here's what he shouted, and a reporter actually from the Los Angeles Times heard him say, "This is an invasion."
I love that.
"We demand respect. We demand that our laws be followed." Huh? Yeah. Wait, what?
The mayor of Tijuana has been wearing a "Make Tijuana Great Again" hat.
Oh my God. Try this out for a second. Listen.
Pretty funny.
This is Patricia Reyes. She's a 62-year-old Mexican protester. She said, "We want the caravan to go. They're invading us. They should have come to Mexico correctly, legally, but they came in like animals. This is a Mexican resident." The demonstrators held signs, "No illegals, no to the invasion."
Amazing.
Have you seen any of this on TV?
No, they don't show it.
The mayor said Tijuana is a place that welcomes anyone, but you have to have papers. You must identify yourself.
Wait, you want to your sovereignty respected?
Right. I don't understand. We work hard in Tijuana. We don't get handouts. The government shouldn't be giving these things to migrants when there are plenty of Mexicans in a difficult position. Much of the protesters said the migrants should be detained and deported. The mayor also said, "I would dare say that not all of them are migrants." Sure, there are some good people in the caravan, but there are many that are bad.
What a hater. What a xenophobe.
He then said human rights are only for upstanding humans.
I don't know if that's true.
That's not true. Christian Mendez, a Honduran traveling with his girlfriend, said, "I'm not sure what we're going to do. We all know we want to request asylum, but we haven't heard. But we have heard about the list. We don't know how long it's going to take. We don't know how long there will be for be food for us to eat."
The Tijuana mayor also said, "Tijuana is a city of immigrants, but we don't want them in this way." Huh? So you want them to come legally? Perhaps? Huh. Sure.
It's weird.
He said it was different with the Haitians. They carried papers. They were in order. It wasn't a horde. Pardon the expression.
An invasion?
Pardoned. You've been pardoned.
It's truly amazing. If you were, well, for instance, I about lost my mind yesterday with Ms. Cortez and her Holocaust comparisons.
Oh, my. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And then Rihanna calling it terrorism because we fired canisters of tear gas. Okay. Everybody who feels that way should have to accept 24 of these migrants into their home permanently.
I don't know.
That's what they're asking America to do.
Here's what I think.
It's our home.
Here's what I think is very, very reasonable.
You don't think 24 is reasonable?
No, not necessarily.
She's got an 11,000 square foot house.
Here's what I would be happy with. We just go back into your Twitter feed and we find all of the times that you were outraged when the Obama administration was tear gassing people on the border. Mm-hmm. Oh, can't find it? Shut up. go back in your Twitter feed when you were outraged that President Obama put people in cages. Can't find it? Shut up. Mm-hmm. I am clear. Mm-hmm. I was against that when it was happening. I was talking about it
to
when
the point
it was happening.
Where we went down to the border and brought the kids Christmas presents.
Yeah, right.
So
and said, "Go home now."
Yeah,
go home.
I mean, yeah.
The other thing is, I cannot take the lecturing from the left on the Jews and the and the St. Louis that was turned away. Excuse me. They were going to an extermination camp. That's what fate had in store for them. If you want to talk to me about asylum, then tell me that you have been leading the charge for the Christians and the Yazidis who are being exterminated and enslaved.
Oh, but nobody can talk about having helped those people.
No. Yeah, right.
Well,
yeah, we can. They've never said anything about that's an actual refugee. How about Asia Bibi? Are you talking about bringing her in? Because she is currently in hiding in her own country because she will not say, "I reject my faith and I accept Islam." Nobody's taking her. She's being passed around from country to country and nobody's taking her. Where are you on that? If you have said yes to those two things and you're on record, well, then let's talk about the immigration status of these people, because I know you're an honest broker. No one in the media is an honest broker on this. No one.
And obviously, Pat's 24 people for Rihanna to take in is a little ridiculous. I would advocate 1 per 1,000 square feet of your home.
Okay, so you're
11
talking 11.
For her, she would take 11. In 11.
See, it's not 12.
It's not 12. It's ridiculous.
Not 12.
See, two dozen.
You're
that's
right,
too much.
Stu. I was a little silly.
You know. Yeah.
11.
Can we come to a common sense ground in the middle where Rihanna just accepts 11 migrants?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Pat.
Pat Gray Unleashed on the Blaze Radio and TV Network. You can also get it on the podcast as well.
Welcome to the program. So glad you're here. We're going to take the media apart piece by piece on the Mexican thing coming up in just a few minutes. Also tonight, we're going to provide some clear evidence of who is now funding and who is now behind some of this. We found it through a couple of sources, but we were interested to find that even the New York Times reported on this today, although they didn't mention any connection to George Soros, strangely enough, but they did provide us with the organizing NGO.
Yeah, which is pretty interesting.
Pretty interesting. The we'll have all of that tonight at 5 o'clock, only on The Blaze.
Yeah, you want beginning to end, all the background, all the history, all of this with the caravan. Tonight is the show to watch.
This is
all of it.
This is the show that I think shows you who has credibility.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are absolutely consistent on all of it. On all of it. We never said that George Soros was involved in this. We said it doesn't appear to be.
We don't have any evidence of it.
We have no evidence of it. Mm-hmm. However, once they hit Mexico City, these organizations have said that they're going to get involved, and we'll look for that. Well, we did. There they are. They're now the organizing committee, and it's George Soros money. We're going to take it all apart for you tonight at 5, and we're going to give a quick little preview of it coming up in just a second, in the next hour.
I made the mistake of watching CNN a little bit this morning, and they are still treating the migrant caravan as if it's this fever dream of the president. It's like the headline in the New York Times today, in the story you're talking about, no clear end to chaos as migrants confront U.S. border. And it goes through and talks about how there's not a caravan there. Of course not. There are four caravans on their way there with as many as 10,000 total members. And it goes through the details of this. It is not a fever dream. It's not some crazy thing. It obviously wasn't an election issue. We were past the election. And we're still talking about it because it was a real issue before. It was a real issue before Donald Trump. It was a real issue now. It's been a real issue this entire time. Conservatives have cared about it the entire time. We've been consistent on it. And the fact that you want to come out here and just make it seem like this is some crazy, fever dream of the president of the United States, it's ridiculous.
You're denying reality.
You're denying reality.
You're denying reality. And we'll see how far down the rabbit hole we really are. But I'm sorry. I don't see the average American. I don't see the average person who's losing their job at GM denying the reality of what an open border would really mean. They're on the losing end of this, and they're exposing themselves, and I think it's tremendous. We'll help them expose it next. We want to talk to you a little bit about home title lock. This is something that the FBI says is huge. It is the fastest growing crime, and you need to prepare for it.
Yeah, there's really only one way to do this too, which is hometitlelock.com. The FBI has been all over this, but you know they're going to protect you after this happens. This is not something they're going to get involved with, until you're dealing with it. And when you're dealing with it, your life is upside down. You are out hundreds of thousands of dollars. You are in a situation where you're going through the courts and dealing with government and trying to get these things reversed. You do not want to be involved in unwinding this process. Stop it before it starts. Home title fraud is something where these thieves, they get a control of your documents. They can transfer the title to their name. They can take out a home equity loan under your name, and then you get stuck with the payments. Why not take a few pennies a day and give it to Home Title Lock? Because then they can put that barrier around your home title and mortgage. When they detect tampering, they're there to help shut it down. If you've already had this happen to you, you want to make sure that you're aware of it and you can start fighting back right away. They have a $100 search that is absolutely free to make sure you're not already a victim when you sign up at HomeTitleLock.com. It's your biggest investment. It's your nest egg. It's a big part of the American dream. Your home, you got to protect it. It's HomeTitleLock.com. I've signed up for it. Glenn has signed up for it as well. It makes a big difference.
You need this. You really do need this. HomeTitleLock.com.
Glenn Beck.
Well, no one was hurt on Sunday by the tyranny of the tear gas from the U.S. Border Patrol agents against the helpless Central American babies that were just there. We don't know, but we don't know how they got there. We don't know why they were five and still in diapers, but it happened. They were just innocently trying to break through the border fence. That's all they were trying to do. No injuries were reported, but we have the next best thing. We have photos that write headlines for us. Here's a couple of samples for you. Photograph of children in diapers fleeing tear gas at border sparks anger. Or this. These children are barefoot in diapers choking on tear gas. Yes, that's the evil U.S. empire. The Israel of the Americas, dare I say it. If we can't catch mothers and children to lock them up in cages, well, then we just have to do all we can to tear gas them. At least that's the convenient narrative when you don't care about reporting on the complicated truth of the situation. And actually, media, it ain't that complicated. You have an agenda. It was just peace-loving migrants having a peaceful protest against the mean old bully Uncle Sam, who dares to enforce his own laws about entering the country. How dare him? So did we target babies with tear gas, or was there another underreported reality? Well, here is the chief U.S. patrol agent, Rodney Scott. He was there. Here's what he said.
I kind of challenged that this was a peaceful protest, or that the majority of these people were claiming asylum. We ended up making about 42 arrests. Only 8 of those were females, and there were only a few children involved. The vast majority of the people we're dealing with are adult males. Similar to what we saw the first wave of the caravan that came up about a week or so ago, the group immediately started throwing rocks and debris at our agents, taunting the agents. Once our agents were assaulted and the numbers started growing, we had, you know, 2 or 3 agents at a time initially facing hundreds of people at a time. They deployed tear gas to protect themselves and to protect the border.
Yeah, it doesn't really click with the Trump tear gassing baby story, does it? I mean, there are photos. Well, there is a photo. What if I told you this whole border rushing incident wasn't really all that unique? What if I told you that the tear gassing, you know, that's not that unique? In fact, exactly 5 years ago on Sunday, November 25th, 5 years ago, there were some migrants that rushed the border fence at the same crossing point. Those migrants also threw rocks and bottles at U.S. border agents under Barack Obama. Those agents also responded by firing pepper spray back at the mob. Oh, wait a minute. And that was for 100. This was for 1,000. Yet there were no cameras there, no embedded reporters, no sackcloth and ashes headlines. There are pictures. We have them. Nobody's been interested in seeing them. In fact, nobody's still interested in seeing them in the mainstream media. There's no concern about the then-President Obama allowing such a barbaric response to innocent asylum seekers. Well, it's just that our priorities have changed since then, I guess. I wonder how that happened. The photos and, of course, focus on mothers and children is an attempt by the media to distill a very complex situation into an easy-to-swallow outrage pill. Don't take it, because we can tell you the facts. The media will not. They could, but they will not. So let's look into this just a little deeper, shall we?
It's Tuesday, November 27th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Okay, I just want to hit a couple of things. This is what the media has said. This is what the media claimed. This is what the media is still claiming. And let me just take it piece by piece. First of all, the tear gas. We just gave you that. This is exactly the cages. Everybody was outraged that Donald Trump had cages. Well, no, they were built by the Obama administration. In fact, Obama had twice as many children in cages than Donald Trump did. He was actually reducing the number from its high under Barack Obama. Same thing with the gassing. We have pictures. That was only for 100 people. Wow, if they were out of control with 1,000, they were 10 times out of control with 100. I mean, that's crazy. They only had 100 back in Obama, and he just threw the tear gas. We have to be a welcoming country, because we are a welcoming, and they are not going to come and push the fences down or climb the walls. Remember, Jim Acosta said, "Mr. President, you showed in your campaign video of protesters climbing walls and pushing down fences, and that was racist." No, Jim, that wasn't. That was this group of people entering Mexico. That's what that was. President never said that. But that's what that was. Well, then Jim Acosta says, well, but they're hundreds and hundreds of miles away. They're probably not even going to make it. Well, they did. Shockingly, how did they get here so fast? Because you were right. They were hundreds and hundreds of miles away. And many of them, as you pointed out, were barefoot. Wow, barefoot. And you made it weeks and weeks and weeks in advance. You must be superhuman or have some assistance from someone. No. These are just good people. They're not going to be climbing the walls. Yes, well, they did. They're not going to be trying to storm the gates. Well, yes, they just did. They're not invaders. And you're a racist for even saying that. Well, wait a minute. That's what Mexicans who were in the streets in Mexico yesterday protesting their government's response to the migrants, which is just this. You're going to stay here until the Americans process you. They don't like that. They don't like that at all. Why should we be paying for these people? They didn't come in peacefully. They didn't come in the right way. Well, wait a minute. So are the Mexicans racist against other Hispanics? Or are they just making a point of law and order? Well, they're only talking about this because of the election. That's what CNN said before the election. Well, we're talking about it now. And so what election are we playing for? Wrong again. No Soros connection. You're an anti-Semite if you even bring up Soros's name. Well, I don't know. You might be an anti-Semite if you like Soros or don't like Soros. Talking about Soros does not make you an anti-Semite, either good or bad. Anti-Semitism is hating Jews. That's what that's all about. I don't hate Jews. I have this really weird thing. I think you should get to know people and judge them on the content of their character. Then you can hate them for real legitimate reasons. Why would you just lump everybody in?
This is not a difficult distinction.
It's really not.
If you hate Jews because they're Jews, you're an anti-Semite.
If you hate one
specific Jew because of his actions unrelated to him being Jewish, or as he seems to claim now, an atheist,
then you're not
an anti-Semite.
Okay, so here's the thing. We could have told you that George Soros was behind this whole thing. We could have. We didn't. In fact, we said there's no evidence that we can find any evidence that George Soros is involved. Now, you could assume because George Soros himself wrote in a Wall Street Journal piece, an op-ed piece, that he was going to spend $500 million on migrant issues. $500 million. Okay, well, maybe he was talking just solely about the European migrants. Maybe that was it. But you could have assumed that some of it was going to go to the migrants here. But we didn't. You could assume that he or his organizations would be funding this based on the fact that they finance the NGOs that organize the April caravan. But we didn't assume. We said no evidence that those people are involved at this time. However, we have heard that once they reach Mexico, if they reach Mexico, then this organization will step in. But that is just what we've heard. They have not stepped in. Well, today it's interesting that you open up the New York Times, and the New York Times is quoting the organizing organization, the NGO. My gosh, it's the same NGO that was not the organizing NGO at the beginning, but is now the organizing NGO, and it's the same one that organized the rally, the caravan in April, funded by George Soros. You won't find the George Soros connection in the New York Times because they're all scared to death of him.
But they do point out that they were the ones who organized the caravan last spring.
Yeah, they do point that out.
They do point that out.
All they don't do is just say, and where do you get a lot of your financing? Oh, George Soros organizations. Okay. Then we get to these. We have to be a welcoming country, especially for women and children. Okay. I like consistency. I like consistency of thought. Chaos is not a way to run a country, not a way to run a life. Consistency of thought. If one of your thoughts is inconsistent with another one of your thoughts, one of them is wrong. Or you are deciding to live in conflict. Okay? Because they should all come together. Sometimes they don't, i.e. quantum mechanics. We have to live in that state of, I don't know. It doesn't seem like it would make sense because it violates all the things we thought, but we don't know. I can handle that kind of chaos because you're still searching for the answer. Not when you have the answer. For instance, we must take in women and children who are persecuted. Really? Okay. I believe that. But do you? Because if you do believe that today, could you please show me your Twitter account where you were talking about the women and children who are Christians and Yazidis who have been crucified, tortured, raped up to 20 times a day? Can you please show me where you said we must take these people in? Because the Nazarene Fund has been saying that for a while. We have thousands of people that have gone to other countries, including Australia. Australia has been an amazing country. You know how many the United States has taken? One. These people face death, constant rape, slavery, beheadings. We've taken one. When Ocasio-Cortez said yesterday, oh, this is like the Jews. No, it's not. No, the Christians. The Christians, that's like the Jews. That's like the Jews, the Christians in the Middle East. And you're turning them away. You want another example? How about the Uyghurs? Remember the Uyghurs that we turned over to China? We turned them over to China. They were facing execution. We don't have to make this about, we don't have to make this just about Christians or Yazidis or atheists. Let's make this about Muslims. Can you show me your tweet and your Twitter feed where you are standing up to China and helping expose the 1 million Muslims that have been rounded up in China merely for being Muslim? If you can show me your Twitter feed, I can have an honest conversation with you because I'll show you mine. But if you only care about women and children today, if you're only caring about the migrants and the oppressed and the, oh, the huddled masses yearning to breathe free today, you have no credibility. You have an agenda. You have an agenda. If you really cared about them, we'd see that action through your own words and works over a long period of time. Now, everybody can change. So if you want to join us with the Nazarene Fund today, you can. Because those people are enslaved. Enslaved. We're breaking them out. We have a guy today. You want to talk about Central America and South America? We have a guy today that broke up a sex trafficking slavery operation. He is testifying in this country wearing a bulletproof vest on the airplane all week until he gets off. He has to testify against this ring. They are very, very powerful. Please pray for him. He could lose his life because he was freeing slaves in countries like Honduras. If you would like to have some credibility, join us because we're freeing those people. You have no credibility. You only have a political agenda. Well, they're looking for asylum. No, according to NBC's reporter, no. No, many of them are not. In fact, most of them are not. According to the Border Patrol, no. All they have to do is come to the border, raise their hands and say, we need asylum. That's what you have to do to get asylum. You know who tells you that you don't have to get asylum, that you can't do that and get asylum here in America? You know who says that? Drug dealers. The cartels that are making money on being human mules. The people who are making money smuggling people across our border. They're the ones that tell people, oh, no, you can't just cross the border and say you want asylum. They're the ones. Oh, and the media. Oh, and the left. And all of the organizers for the left. They're the ones saying that to people. The truth is, all you have to do is come with your arms raised up and say, I need asylum. And you will be processed. And I'm sorry that there is a process. But the New York Times headline says it all. Today, quote, no clear end to chaos as migrants confront U.S. border. What have I told you for the last 7 years would be the word that you need to look for. And you'll know where to stand on the issue when you see this word. Because it is the author of everything that is happening, trying to destroy the West. The word is chaos. Chaos. Anything that adds to chaos is not good. Thank you, New York Times. No clear end to chaos as migrants confront the U.S. border. For anyone who is in doubt, chaos. That is the objective of everyone who is trying to take the West apart. Create chaos. It's all in their own words. You didn't know that? You should read Addicted to Outrage, because I outline it there clearly. By the way, we're going to be in Tampa, Florida, and Orlando, Florida this weekend. Make sure you grab your tickets now at glenbeck.com/tour. We'll see you this weekend. All right, Secret Service has issued a warning that crooks are using the identity, the United States Postal Service with their informed delivery service to commit identity theft and credit card fraud schemes. What happens is you sign up and say, I want to see what mail's coming in. Well, the scammers are hacking into that system and they're saying, oh, you've got a credit card delivery coming. And then they go and they pull it out of your incoming mail before you get there. This is happening now, and the scams are only getting more sophisticated, and the volume is going up. The only people that really I trust to protect you and me, LifeLock.com. LifeLock.com. Now with the power of Norton Security to prevent you prevent your systems from being hacked and your identity from being stolen, it is LifeLock.com. Use the promo code Beck right now and get 15% off your first year. It's LifeLock.com, promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck.
We're going to go through what you have to go through if you're seeking asylum. It's horrendous. It's almost, seriously, it's almost Takamata and the Inquisition. It is. It's wow. Almost that, except not at all. We're going to go through that coming up in just a second. Also, I want to talk to you about looking for a lighthouse in these times and what that means and how you can identify a lighthouse for a safe harbor. Because things are going to get more and more difficult, especially because I feel the same way I felt in 2007. The economy is truly on the edge, and we're seeing bad signs.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
We're so glad you're here today. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to be in Tampa and Orlando this weekend. You can find your tickets at glennbeck.com/tour. Friday in Tampa, Saturday in Orlando. And David Barton is going to be joining us. He's going to be doing, you know, probably 10 minutes or so before he's got a really cool presentation to make. But I'm also asking him to bring something, one thing really, really cool about history that he can leave you with before the show starts. And that is on Friday and Saturday, Tampa and Orlando. It's a great show, a lot of fun, a lot of laughs. Bring your families. And if you would like to come, I have a couple of tickets for each show. If you want to go to Tampa or Orlando, just call us now, 888-727-BECK. You'll go as my guest. 888-727-BECK, call now. All right, I want to talk about a couple of things, and it involves not only the border, but it also involves the economy, really everything. As I explain in the book, Addicted to Outrage, chaos is our enemy. Anything at all that helps chaos, helps foster chaos, you've got to get away from it. We have to be stable people. So you're looking for a lighthouse. If you can, you want to be the lighthouse. Now, what does a lighthouse do? A lighthouse is on solid footing. It never, ever moves. It is an alert to the boats as they are approaching rocks. Rocks ahead, trouble ahead. It is also a way to navigate when the storms are really bad and you can't see anything. Or if you're all twisted around and the storm has tossed your vessel and you don't know which way is north, south, east, or west, look for the lighthouse or look to the North Star. You need a polar star. You need a lighthouse. Better yet, be one for someone else. Now, how do you know what a lighthouse is? Stability without chaos. Yes, well, the light is going off and on. No, but if you time it, it's making a circle and it's coming back exactly the same amount of time every time. There's no chaos in that. Yes, it's blinking off, on, off, on, but it's exactly the same time. No chaos. It's never, ever moving. You are. So you're looking for stability. Stability in what? In principles. Principles are so critical today. For instance, on the border, were you against the gassing this week? Great. Will you speak out? And did you speak out against the gassing that was happening? We have the pictures. Under Obama? No. Okay. So you're not consistent. Well, I didn't know. Well, why not? Yeah, about the cages. Were you against it then? No. Well, I didn't know. Well, you didn't want to know because I was trying to tell everybody. So if you and the media didn't know, that's your fault. That's your fault. You have compassion when it hurts your cause. Have compassion. Are you compassionate when it hurts? You say you want refugees. Well, did you want the Christians? You know, Barack Obama made it easier if you're a woman and you were abused by your husband to come in and claim asylum. Well, how about the rape slaves over in the Middle East? Are we even talking about them? And Christians don't get all high and mighty because are you talking about the Muslims that are being enslaved in China? You need, a lighthouse needs to have the stability of, for instance, the Supreme Court is the, well, it'll be answered by the Supreme Court because that's the law of the land until it rules against you. And then you're like, we've got to fight this. Well, we don't have to abide by that. My favorite is the ones on the left who say we have to abide by everything the Supreme Court does because the Supreme Court is right on everything. And yet you praise the people who stood up against the Dred Scott decision. No, the Supreme Court doesn't know everything. Sometimes that group of nine people get it wrong, very, very wrong. In the end, it is all up to us through the rule of law. So are you for the rule of law or against the rule of law? And here's another one for conservatives. You need to be a lighthouse. Were you for the GM bailouts? When George Bush said, I had to violate the free market system to save the free market system, did you say, what? Or did you say, oh, that's great. We're going to have, a good share of GM. I'm thrilled about that. I know I didn't. I canceled $1 million contract with GM. It was the first time GM had ever been on talk radio. I canceled it. I did not make any friends at GM or in the radio business when I canceled it. But I couldn't preach to you free market and then come on the air and say, oh, by the way, and here's a government subsidy car. I couldn't do it. Now, GM has paid off that debt. They're a free company again. Are we celebrating? Or, as a lighthouse, are you wobbling? Are you now saying, Right on, Mr. President. You've got to tell them they've got to keep those factory doors open. You've got to tell them they can't make these cuts. You've got to be involved. Which are you? You're not a lighthouse. And that's the only thing that's really, truly going to matter. The only way you can help. People say all the time, what can I do? Be a lighthouse. Be immovable. Because the ships are everywhere. And they're going to start crashing into each other. Because chaos is the word of our times. Chaos. You must do everything you can to reduce chaos so you have credibility to help ships come back into harbor easily and safely. I'm concerned about these things because I've told you that there is a window that is closing. It's twofold window. One of them is technology. I think we're about 5 years away before technology can close in on us and we may not get out. That's a very pessimistic look, but it's one that Elon Musk believes. By 2025, we could be screwed. Maybe not, perhaps not. And I hope that's true. But that's a closing window. The other one is a window that is closing much faster, and that is the economy. When the economy goes south, people generally get a little more testy. We're already testy. Please prepare yourself. I sold my house. You know, people can say whatever they want, but I had a large house. It was an expensive house. And I think the days of large, expensive houses are over. I think the large, expensive houses today, the 20,000, mine wasn't this, but a 20,000 square foot house, those houses are going the way of the Newport, Rhode Island houses, I think. The economy is going to go south. Banking is going to get very tough again, much tougher than it was in 2008. Loans are going to be extremely difficult to get. Don't overspend. If you're looking to sell your house, sell your house right now. Sell your house right now. There's a story in the Wall Street Journal today. I mean, Texas is doing really well, really well. And the Wall Street Journal came out a couple of days ago and said the housing boom is over and it's beginning in Dallas.
That is what the Wall Street Journal is saying. And I just want to thank you, Glenn, for moving us here and selecting this
you're
as a
welcome.
Location.
You are welcome.
I love it here. But I did, you know, I'm a big believer in renting. I love renting.
And you bought a house for the first time.
Not the first time I've ever bought a house, but down here. I would lived here for 5 or 6 years before I bought a house, and I didn't want to. Circumstances sort of made it so it was really the only thing I could do at the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, so of course now is going to be the time that they're going to
it always
the
turns
housing
around.
Boom is going to come to an end. But yeah, I mean, that's what they're saying. I mean, you know, look, there is some evidence here. You know, it's also on the back of a really strong economy, and so those two things are sort of fighting it out. They're saying that the housing market is the thing that is, you know, 16% of the economy. The housing market. Mm-hmm. And they're saying that that is the one piece of this that's out of step with the others that are doing really well. And the belief is that there's still a good market for lower priced homes, but the higher priced homes are not doing as well. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I mean, like, you never know with this stuff. Obviously, like, there was a time in 2006 where you were saying all this stuff and really nobody believed it. I mean, that was the peak of the housing market. In 2007, they were saying, hey, Dow's going to go to 35,000. And you did not get on that bandwagon. And it went down to 6. So it has come back.
I have the same feeling that I had in 06 and 07. That it's coming. It's around the corner. Can't tell you when, but it's we're close. We're close enough to where I'm reevaluating absolutely everything.
And we're due. We are due.
We're
for,
past due.
Yeah. We're due for a downturn here. I hope it doesn't happen. I think we know we have...
tariffs are not helping.
Definitely not helping. I mean, I don't know that they're big enough now to cause...
No.
A massive collapse by themselves.
No.
But if we implement all the things that have been proposed, This puts us higher than every single industrialized country in the world. And the only one, I mean, if you want to talk about a major country that would be close to us, the only one you can really talk about would be Pakistan. Everything else, I mean, any of the typical U.S. trading partners you think about are way less, a quarter or a third of what we would be at. Not and those good. Are the high market ones. In fact, really, the only countries that would be ahead of us are isolated island countries like Bermuda and the Bahamas, who would have higher rates. Now, hopefully, those things don't get implemented and we don't have to deal with that. But that is a real danger. If they do get implemented, we're in serious, serious trouble.
So I was talking to a few people last night and reaching out and asking for advice, people I respect. And I said, where do you put money? Because what is Bitcoin down to today?
Jeez, 3662.
3662.
Mm-hmm. Still considerably up from when we first started talking about it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a lot of people, I get these messages every once in a while, like, yeah, Bitcoin's down, but I've still made a lot of money. Thank God I listened to you guys at the beginning.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it sucks.
It's scary.
Yeah, I mean, it's
scary.
It's definitely
now,
scary.
Why is that? I talked to Tika Tiwari. He's a guy who said it's going to be at 40,000 by the end of the year. Clearly inaccurate. Clearly not going to happen. I talked to him recently and said, so what's the deal? He said, it's bogus. This is all bogus. Everything that is happening is because the big institutions are talking it down while they're positioning themselves to open up giant trading desks into crypto.
Mm-hmm.
So is that going on? I don't know. How do you what do you think is solid ground for investing?
I never think there's solid ground to investing.
I don't either.
It depends on your outlook, right? I mean, I don't know where you put your money if your outlook is in the very short term.
Right. And you look and say, well, put it in a bank. I don't trust the banks. The banks, remember, in 2008, they changed everything. Put you last. The depositor is now last in the chain. So the bank goes out, they don't have to pay you. They can use your money in your account to pay other bills. They changed that after 2008. That's not good.
And you, I mean, look, you're down this. You're basically Ron Swanson when it comes to this. You've got your ATM card is a shovel that you dig up gold in your backyard. So I don't know. But you are, I mean, I think that if you're looking at these things, you know, there are some exciting, you know, there's exciting developments. There's still a lot of, and the economy is still strong. The unemployment is very low. Wage growth is going up. I mean, I'd be concerned too. One of the reasons they're talking about this with the housing market is that people bought a house a few years ago. Their house price has increased considerably.
Mm-hmm.
And what also has happened is interest rates have gone up now.
Yes.
So now they're stuck. They're in this house with a great interest rate that they don't think they can get again. And they're probably right.
Mm-hmm.
And if they go to another house, what they get is a new mortgage with a higher rate where they get less house for the money. So why leave? And that's one of the things that's hurting the market.
All right. I want to talk to you a little bit about the Palm Beach letter and a little bit about Bitcoin and learning about cryptocurrencies.
Oh, was that a commercial? I didn't realize it was.
I was starting into one.
I just went on a rant.
My question was not a commercial, but the Smart Crypto Course, Tanya and I were sitting last night. We were talking about it and we looked. Have you seen Litecoin? It's like $24. Litecoin.
Wow.
I don't know. I will tell you that you need to understand cryptocurrency. You need to understand what's happening, why it's happening, why blockchain is so important, and why these big, huge companies like Chase are getting ready to open up giant trading desks when all of a sudden the numbers look like it's worthless. Why would they do that? Go to smartcryptocourse.com. Find out all you can about blockchain and cryptocurrency, and then invest if you want to. Smartcryptocourse.com or 877-PBL-BECK. Smartcryptocourse.com.
Glenn Beck.
I really want to talk to you more about Bitcoin, Stu, because I think there's a lot there that we should talk about. Also, we're just not going to get to this. The giant cow called Knickers in Australia.
Okay.
He is as tall as Michael Jordan. Look at this picture.
Wow.
It's this cow that makes all the other huge cows look like they're babies.
Yeah. It and is it's just one.
It just one. It is 76 inches tall, almost 7 feet. It weighs 3,000 pounds. You just don't want to mess with this one. The average cow is 58 inches and weighs 2,200. This is over 3,076 inches. Can you imagine walking up to a cow and you're looking up to it like a kid? Then all of a sudden, first time cows look menacing all of a sudden.
Glenn Beck.
So, when you're writing a book about football, you go right to the guy who knows everything about it, Glenn Beck. That's the first. The literary agents say, you got to get on the Glenn Beck program.
Number one on the press tour. It's definitely the first stop you want to do.
I have a feeling we're not the number one stop, but we're thrilled to have a couple of guests talking about the new book, Brainwashed. The Bad Science Behind CTE and the Plot to Destroy Football.
Yeah, very cool. Dr. Peter Cummings, who's a board-certified forensic neuropathologist. I'm never going to be able to say
pathologist.
Pathologist. Pathologist, thank you. And also, of course, Merrill Hodge, who everybody knows, except for Glenn, because Glenn doesn't know anything about sports. But if he did, he would
know. I would look at him in this well-tailored suit and say, you were a professional athlete.
he identifies athletes by the fashion.
By the he has to have that one specially cut because his shoulders are big. And his waist is a little died easy. He's in good shape.
Thank you guys for doing this. Yeah.
This is our pleasure.
Really interesting topic. The book Brainwashed is, I think, really important from the perspective of it gives a little bit more context into a story that people have followed very very loosely, I think. You know, I think I was joking before we came on the air that most people's understanding of this issue starts with Will Smith was a doctor. And Will Smith actually was not a doctor. He played that in a movie. The movie was Concussion, and I think that's set the narrative for CTE and the NFL.
So let me take this, because I'm not a football fan, and I have been following this, I think, like the average American who is not a big fan. Okay. So let's start with this, and I may be below the average American here. Okay. CTE is caused by repeated injury to the head because you guys are knocking heads over and over again. The NFL knew about this. People are, turning into vegetables. They didn't care. They hid all of this science from people. And now people like you are out. And we don't know if you have. Do you have any of the signs of CTE?
Well, they don't know really what the signs are, symptoms are, to be honest. If we go back to everything that you just mentioned there, actually, we are here because you're global. And this actual message is global. It's not just football. You know, I tell people, my son's first concussion ever slipped in a shower. Okay, mm-hmm. Now it's 4 days before his first bowl game ever, but he's now ineligible to play, even though the concussion was not in an athletic environment or, say, practice in football. He slipped in a shower. Because for an hour, I was trying to get in a bow. Of all the things that you could have done, and he's the best athlete I've ever seen. How did you slip in a shower? He can't play. I mean, that's just, but concussions and head trauma happen
all the time.
All the time in all kinds of environments. It's not just an athletic environment. So there are so many things that you said right there, and you say, repetitive head injuries cause it. Okay, there's no scientific evidence of that. But in the media, they used words like linked, cause. There's not one piece of scientific literature that has those words in it, linked or caused.
So
none.
Wait, is there any statistical proof that shows this happens to more football players than the average society?
Well, the issue is this, and the questions you're asking are great because they're the same questions we asked each other. I Merrill's a former NFL player, but I grew up loving football. But I banned it in my house because I didn't want my son to play it because I'd seen this narrative that was being broadcast.
And this is your expertise.
And this is my expertise, right? So when my son became interested in football, I took it upon myself to sit down proactively and go through the science and then look at the sport and see how that had changed. And one of the things you start to notice is this narrative now that is sort of believed that if you play football, you're inevitably going to get concussions. You're inevitably going to get CTE. You're inevitably going to become suicidal, depressed, anxious, and demented. And that just doesn't exist scientifically. If you actually look at the mortality studies that have been done on, and this is NFL players, so it's really hard to bring this back to youth football players, because 99% of the football players in this country are not going to play beyond high school. Mm-hmm. So you'll see that NFL players live longer. They have longer lifespans. They have healthier lifestyles. They have lower rates of suicide rates and homicide rates that are a fraction of the general population.
Wow.
They have arrest rates that are lower than the general population.
You told you that's not the image that you, think of.
You don't.
Because
the NFL.
It's that you see it on TV and they're superstars. I mean, these are gods to us in our society. So if you hear
it. You would even think that you could explain some suicide from, I mean, people identify with, what am I going to do with my life? If you've wanted to play football your whole life and then it's over, you can really go, that could really screw with somebody's head, even if you're not been hit in the head.
Yeah. Well, you know, I try to use this with people to make them understand that. Now, Glenn, I know you've been doing this for a long, long time. Let's just say something happens to you and I'm saying you can never do radio or TV again. You're done.
No.
Now, that right there can put you in a depressive state, that transition to, you know, what we call, Chuck Noll was the greatest man I've ever been around, greatest leader and coach. He used to always talk to us about our life's work. He's like, men, it's not football.
Yes.
You know, get your education, use the relationships. You're going to have to do something else with your life's work. Well, when you transition from football to your life's work, that's not easy for anybody. Football player. And I think the more that football was your life, and the more you really worked on your life's work, that bridge over there, the bigger the struggle is, the longer that can take. And then you add the things that we know have connections with our mental health, cancers, and every cardiovascular disease is drugs, alcohol, opioids, obesity, sugar, inflammation. Those are all lifestyle choices that are scientific evidence. They contribute to all of the things that I just mentioned. Well, we control those choices. Those aren't things like age or genetics where nobody can control age. Nobody can really, if there's a genetic link, knowing it's good to me, that's why I can be proactive, but I can't change my genetics.
Right.
They are my facts. But a majority of all the things that create a lot of the cognitive brain health issues we have stems from all those things I just said, drugs, alcohol, opioids, inflammation, sugar, all of those things, which are a lifestyle choice.
So, and again, excuse me for just being a regular layperson on this, haven't paid attention, but are you saying that getting hit in the head did not increase the problems with people like Muhammad Ali?
Well, I think there's a difference between that, because if you look kind of historically at this CTE science, the first original cases were from the 20s in boxers. And these were guys that boxed all year. And they, after they finished their whatever tournament or whatever they were doing their season, they would go box in carnivals. They would, you know, do sideshows. So it was a constant thing. So we know that there's a real thing that happens with boxers. It has to be. And it's been really well described in the literature. And there's a, you know, so if you want to bring it up to football, I mean, nobody's going to say that hitting your head is okay one time or 100 times. And we do a lot of things to try to prevent that.
But that's not the same as boxing.
That's not the same as boxing. And so if you look at the boxing population of people and what their brains kind of look like when they looked at them in the autopsies versus what the football players' brains look like, they have different pathologies in them. And there are some people in Europe and Britain that say, you know, CTE doesn't exist outside of boxing. The Americans are cuckoo. You know, so we're not really sure. And Merrill has said it so perfectly a million times. I'm going to steal his line that with CTE, we don't know what causes it and we don't know what it causes. And I think that is where the science is right now.
And you know something that I think it was the final spark that drove this book is when I went from neuropathologist to neuropathologist in this country and Canada. And they all kept coming back to, guys, we don't, it's an observation state. We do not know anything beyond that. We have cases where they never played football. We have cases where they have no history of head trauma. They never played sports. I'm like, well, time out. If you have cases where you didn't even play sports and they have this pattern and they had no history of head trauma, how come we only hear about football ones and sports ones? And now people think it's only in that arena when we have all these cases outside that arena. And that's when the discrepancy of what science really says versus what we see in the media was so grotesquely off that I just believe people needed all the information to understand the science to help them with the choices that they're making with their families and their kids.
Okay, so let me take a break, and then we can come back in, because the name of the book is Brainwashed. And the second part of it, The Plot to Destroy Football. So let's talk about the media and their role and the, quote, plot to destroy football, kind of a heavy charge, when we come back in just a second. First, our sponsor this half hour is Goldline. Boy, oh boy. I've been saying all day today, because I really sat down and really did some homework over the last few weeks on the economy and the things that are happening now with this trade war with China, what happened yesterday, not only with China, where the president is saying we're going to put, you know, 10 to 20% tariff on Apple. That's not really good at all. Also, GM, what's going to happen to the economy? We've got to be more careful on what we're doing, and the economy is having some difficulty in the long term. Right now, it might feel good, but in the long term, it's a little dicey. What are you going to do with your money? What are you going to do to protect yourself? I look at gold as an insurance policy, not as an investment. It's been a good investment for me, but that's not what I buy it for. I buy it as an insurance policy against madness. The world occasionally goes mad, and it always destroys its own money. It destroys its banking system, and then it starts all over again, and it always returns to gold. It's the thing that has value. It's been this way since the beginning of time. You find it in the Bible. Okay, so what do you do? I hope I have it, and I hope to never, ever have to use it. I hope to pass it on to my kids so they have it as an insurance policy. If you don't have an insurance policy against global insanity, think again. Call Goldline now, 866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE. Read their important risk information. Make sure that gold or silver is right for you. But it's right for me and my family, 866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
We're talking to NFL great Merrill Hodge and Dr. Peter Cummings about their new book, Brainwashed. And it's about CTE and the NFL and what's true and what isn't. I did an interview with Dr. David Chow from San Diego. He's a former head doctor of the San Diego Chargers and now does a lot of NFL injury stuff. And talking to him was fascinating because it was the first exposure I ever had to any skepticism from the idea that you go in the NFL, you get CTE. That's pretty much what the media says.
Right.
And he said there's much more that we don't know about CTE than we do know. He talked about, is this true? I mean, is it hereditary? Is it other people in other sports and other professions? What do we know? What is the actual facts?
Well, let me just tell you this, and Dr. Cummings will build on this in a much better way, but when I ask these neuropathologists about, you know, the pattern, since it's an observation state, you don't know what causes it. You don't know what it causes. And they start sharing all of these cases where, you know, they find the pattern in somebody who never played football, you know, never had a history of concussion, never had a head trauma. There's a four-month-old and a one-year-old that they've found the pattern in. Well, right there, you can't obviously blame sports or football.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But what was interesting in some of the literature, like and even the science papers, if you read the science papers, there's clarity there too that they don't know. They say it 100 times in the paper. We don't know. We don't know. But those people who wrote the paper are the ones that are in the media giving you the quotes where, oh, I got to believe everybody has this that's played football.
How is it that you, because didn't you earlier say we don't even know really what it is? You don't know. I mean, what are the symptoms?
Nobody knows. Science hasn't been able to get that answer yet.
And how do we know what, you know, when you say babies had it, how do we know if there's no set of...
Good question. There's outside in the kind of football world, CTE papers, there's, and this is something you touched on a second ago, the voices of skepticism. When I started this journey for myself, you know, I thought I was Don Quixote swinging at windmills. Mm-hmm. You know, like, am I the only person that sees that this isn't matching up?
And that's not how you started.
That's not how I started. Yeah, I started with not wanting my kid to even watch football on TV. Mm-hmm. So when I started doing some research on my own, looking these papers up, I found people like Dr. Chow, who's a fantastic guy. We've talked a couple of times. And I found out that, you know, a lot of the people, majority of the people in my neurotrauma world feel the same way I do, have the same opinion that I have about this. And so they're, one of the things we try to talk about in this book is try to show that research that's out there that contradicts a lot of the things that we've taken to be truth about CTE. So when you start looking, you find these cases of people who have never played football that have CTE, like this one epilepsy case series that had a one-year-old, a four-month-old, I think 2 1-year-olds. You know, how do they have, and this, they die, they have temporal lobe resections. They take out a piece of temporal lobe out of their brains, and you look at them under the microscope for this protein tau, which we all have. It's a normal protein that helps stabilize nerve cells. But if something happens to the nerve cell, the tau becomes what's called hyperphosphorylated. A lot of phosphate groups get stuck on it. It gets sticky. And so they found this same pattern in these children and in all of the epileptic cases that they looked at who had never played contact sports. So when you start looking at these cases and you have to say, well, did they even have symptoms of CTE or what we think may be symptoms of CTE? And they didn't. So we haven't been able to figure any of that out yet in science. All we know is we have this pattern. And like I said, we don't know what causes it and we don't know what it causes.
Well, there's a lot of money at stake against the NFL. The NFL is spending a lot of money to try to help people along, are they not?
Actually, but see, the NHL and the NFL have already settled. So, like, people ask me this, well, what will NFL players say about your book? I'm like, wouldn't you want to know the truth? I mean, at the end of the day, wouldn't you want to know all of the facts, everything, somebody to do the work and explain it to you? And then, listen, I'm not telling you to like football. I'm not telling you how you should change your mind. I'm just asking you to open your mind to all of the information. You use it how you want. Well, the settlement for NHL and NFL is done. Now, people don't know, it's settled with unsettled science. The science is not confirmed one way or the other. They just settled. So this has no bearing on it. The NFL got nailed $1 billion. That $1 billion is for players and health issues, cognitive health issues, which is, I could do a whole nother show on just how much money is going to be sitting there going to waste when it could go to other things that were football related. And the NHL did the same thing. So it's over. So this is not going to change any of that. Then I can't go back to court and go, hey, we read the book Brainwashed, and I think we've got to make them prove the science before we settle.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because nobody can prove the science. That's just a problem. You can't prove it because there's no science there for it. But being just settled.
So if it doesn't affect any of that,
no.
Your main motivation for writing the book is?
Families, kids. My passion for kids, my passion for youth football. That's why I went. In 2009, I was the first person, player, coach, parent, dad, that stood in front of Congress and go, listen, my career ended because of this in 1994. We changed what we do in the NFL. Okay, this is 2009 that I'm in front of Congress. Mm-hmm. We're doing stuff in the NFL, NCAA. 99% of our football players are ages 8 to 18, and we're doing nothing there. Let's establish a protocol, and actually what I challenged them to do with all of sports. Because what I had found out, even to that point, I'd been implementing a head trauma protocol in my youth program for years, that if we do these things, if your son or daughter has any type of head trauma in any environment, do the one thing that's most important. Remove them from that environment and don't let them return. If you just do that.
So your son's never showered?
And you know what? That's a great point. You know, it's a humor side, but a realistic one. It can happen anywhere in our life. So wouldn't it be better to know about it? Yeah. So you remove them, and you know what? Evaluate them. If you need to get them to a neuropathologist or a medical professional to be evaluated before they return to that activity, that's the best thing and safest thing you can do for your kids. So at least do that for them. So that's why I went to Congress. Can we do that? Can we get a protocol to really help create a safer environment for our kids when they're being active?
It's fascinating too. I think
I'm going to talk to him about that shower deal now.
the way they've gone after the NFL, I think, has been interesting in this, because the way they portray it is this doctor from Nigeria comes up, he discovers this, goes to the NFL, proves it to them. They ignore it because they want money. Now, in reality, they have some of the top doctors there. There was disagreement at the time and still is to some level.
But, not to some level. There seems to be a lot.
Major disagreement. But was there a time that they didn't act fast enough? Did they slow play this at all?
Well, here's where you my career and my history is interwoven in all of those people. Dr. Maroon and Dr. Lovell were the first group of doctors to ever do cognitive testing in 1991, before any neuropathologist, neurologist in the world was even thinking of doing something like that for sports.
Wow.
Because Chuck Noll challenged them to give him subjective and objective information, not just one, give me two. That's why that test was created.
30 seconds here before we go.
If you look at my career, what they got nailed for, it was not reacting quick enough.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like they're hiding stuff, and they didn't react fast enough. They didn't get the cognitive test established quick enough. It wasn't like they knew something that everybody else
didn't. It's not like the tobacco industry.
Nothing like that.
Okay, so let's get into what they did know and the press and how this has all been spun when we come back. There's a new book called Brainwashed, The Bad Science Behind CTE and the Plot to Destroy Football. The author's Merrill Hodge.
You knew you were going to say it right.
I always do.
You do it every time.
Every time. Ancestors when I see him. Just put a D in there. Come on.
And Peter Cummings, who is a board-certified forensic neuropathologist. They've been studying CTE. Merrill, you're one of the first people that were going through cognitive testing with the NFL back in the early 90s. There's one part of this, the plot to destroy football. Plot is a pretty heavy word. Is it a plot to destroy football?
If you look at, I'll just give you one example. We were just talking about how you can have some type of head trauma. We jokingly about my son slips in a shower, okay? Thanksgiving, I watch a 7-year-old crawl under a coffee table and try to get out too soon. Boom, cracks his head, cuts his head open. So, you know, can have car accident, wheel sports across the board. They got legislation in California to ban tackle football till age 14. Now, you can still box at age 8, MMA fight at age 8.
Jeez.
You can play soccer, lacrosse, every other contact sport. Why would you just single out football in 5 different states? There's no scientific evidence whatsoever that contact sports or contact activities, wheeled sports, jumping on trampolines, having pillow fights, being a kid, living life, being active, has ever caused development issues in our younger age later in life. There's no scientific evidence of that. They have none of that, so why would you target that? Why would you bring that legislation to any state with no scientific evidence whatsoever? And if you really say, well, we care about kids, why aren't you doing it for all sports?
Why aren't you doing it? Yeah, especially boxing. I mean, boxing is
MMA,
so much.
Everything.
Yeah, MMA. Yeah. I mean, it's so clear that you're getting punched in the face. That's the point.
Exactly.
That's punch somebody in the head.
Right?
Yeah.
So
until they're knocked out.
Right.
Hello.
And then in boxing, they do the right thing, and they remove them and don't let them box again. I'm like, okay, well, guess what? Well, you don't have – that is the objective there.
Mm-hmm.
So when, like, all of that is excluded, you have to ask the people, what are you doing? What's your purpose?
What's the motivation there? Because I mean, I think part of it, you know, football gets targeted because, you know, science, health, food reporting is worse than even – we complain about political bias in reporting all the time. But the science and health reporting is worse, I think. The media is terrible at doing this. And so I think because it's, you know, there's a Will Smith movie out there, you know. I mean, there's all this momentum.
As soon as it gets into the zeitgeist, it's over.
Yeah. Right. And that's why – is that why football is targeted? Is there some other reason why they think –
Well, listen, we've done some interviews with the media, and we have this conversation. Okay, listen, why? Why do you keep bringing, people keep wanting to bring back the NFL? They kind of keep circling back the NFL. Sir, I go, I didn't write the book for the NFL. It has nothing to do about the NFL other than my career's intertwined there, and I can tell you the truth about everything. And they would literally say to us, because it's the big ticket. I said, what are you talking about? So ignore all of the true facts that you're sending to the people who read you or read your stuff or listen to you. Forget giving them all the truth and all the information. You're going to circle and keep targeting football because it's the big ticket. I mean, to me, that's just a grotesque abuse of your journalistic lack of skills.
It's also a misread, I think, of who people really are. Yes, the NFL is an interesting story, but are you going to play? Are you going to let your kids play football? Yes or no is something that all of us have to deal with. Whether that football player or that football player have CTE in their life and they've been screwed by somebody in the NFL, that's not affecting me.
Right.
But I know in my family, are we going to let Are we going to let, you know, our son play football? Your family going to play football? That's something we all deal with.
Right. Well,
and you both dealt with it too.
Right. And I'm going to tell you this. People ask me that, you know, like they ask me, were you surprised at what you found when I went on the journey? Because listen, I went on there with a headline, but I have great connections, relationship. It didn't make sense to me. The numbers don't add up. I've played in the NFL. I go to NFL alumni events all the time. There's hundreds of NFL, former NFL players in their 60s, 70s, 80s. We just had three pass away here in the last month, late 80s, early 90s. Mm. I mean, that's played back in the 50s mm-hmm. and 60s when you couldn't even drink water. You're considered soft, okay?
Right, yeah.
Plastic helmets. And so the quest to find out really the truth of it, I was actually more shocked than I thought that how uncertain they were with everything and all these cases that existed outside of sports. But it did make me think, because they asked the follow-up question, if I'd have found out the opposite. Had I found out the opposite, I'd have pulled my son out of football immediately. I'd have ripped him out of football that second if I really thought this had anything to do with it.
Because hey, you're putting even more than your money where your mouth is.
This is your kids. Children.
Yeah. Right.
And you're doing the same thing. That's why you got you as a doctor into this.
Right. And the same thing. If I had felt for one second that there was enough information there to keep my kid from playing football, I'd be screaming this from the top of a mountain. You know, but I found the opposite. And Merrill touched on an interesting point of his NFL alumni friends. There have been a number of studies from some big universities like Mayo and Vanderbilt that have followed football players for 50 years after high school careers, and I mean hundreds of them, and found that they don't have any increased risk of dementia, Parkinson's disease, ALS, or any of these things we think you're going to get from playing football. They did find, they compared them to athletes that didn't play football, and they also compared them to band members and members of Glee Club. And I think the highest rate of dementia was actually in the clarinet players.
That makes sense, though.
It does. That does make sense. You're taking up the clarinet. Yeah, you're right. Like, there's something wrong with
there's
you.
There's my next book, Band Clarinet.
But it's interesting, though, because I mean, some of these studies, when you're talking about life expectancy, show that baseball players have shorter lives than football players, which, again, people would not think that. But the science is the science. And, you know, you want to look at it with an honest eye and get out of the media sort of firestorms about these things. And it doesn't seem that a lot of people are able to do that, especially when you're making a decision about your kids.
Right, right. That's emotional.
Yeah.
You know, people get emotional.
So it's got to be tough for you, Merrill, because your son can't play. You just said you're one of the best athletes I've ever seen.
Yeah.
He gets a concussion from slipping in the shower. He now can't play. He was quarterback.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
So it's got to be a double whammy to you, because you're like, oh my God, this isn't even true.
Yeah. Well, he came back.
Yeah, he comes back and plays, but based on when he got the concussion, he couldn't play because it was 4 days before the game.
So that's why
he couldn't play.
Oh, okay.
So that's just the proper protocol in place.
Yeah.
That's why I talk about, we've been playing football for nearly 100 years. And if I said to a family, when would be the best time for your kids to be active and involved in sports? If you didn't say today, based on protocols, treatments, therapies, equipment, instruction, and rules, you are extremely uninformed. If you picked the 90 up to this last 10, you're uninformed.
Because they have made major improvements, not just in protocols, but the equipment as well.
Listen, when I retired, I was in intensive care, and I remember somebody telling me, a NASCAR helmet's better than that football helmet you had on. And I said, well, A, why, and B, why aren't we wearing NASCAR helmets?
Mm-hmm.
They're like, a NASCAR helmet's meant to absorb impact. It's got to withstand one car accident. Mm-hmm. So you got to get rid of that helmet, or it's probably going to be explosive. Mm-hmm. Football helmets are meant to withstand impact. Our helmets today are absorb and deflect impact. So no, there's no concussion-proof helmet. That's not what I'm saying. But the technology in the protection and how we go about playing, and if you do have head trauma, we do something about it now. And there's treatments and therapies that they do for you to help heal your brain so that you return back in a safer environment and a better, healthy environment. Mm. That's exciting stuff. But we don't hear that because of a headline that is still under the attention that the science can't back.
I remember a headline, and I don't even know if this is true. I remember a headline that said rugby players don't have this problem. And they were saying that it's because of the technology of the NFL that it makes you more willing to really go for it because you know you're protected. And so it gives you a false sense of security. Is there anything to rugby players?
Well, they found it in rugby players, and they found it, the CTE pattern, in rugby players, soccer players, or, you know, European football players. The interesting thing about rugby, though, was that was an inspiration for a lot of rule changes. And that's something else that a lot of parents don't know about. And I was completely ignorant of rule changes in football when I started out with this. I didn't just read the science papers. I went to USA Football. I went to Pop Warner. I wanted to know what they were doing, even if there was a slightest risk. Mm-hmm. How are we improving the game to account for this? When we don't know, let's do something proactive. So when he started, the rugby-style tackling became a really big popular thing. Because when I grew up in Maine, we didn't have we were in a kind of low-income town, and we didn't have a youth football team until I was like in seventh or eighth grade. But we played morning, noon, and night out on the playground, mm-hmm. and without equipment tackling. Mm-hmm. And nobody got hurt. We're not knowing at the time, but we were using rugby-style tackling of wrapping somebody up, pulling them down. Mm-hmm. So you kind of learned that technique on your own, but that was a big inspiration for some of the techniques that are being used and taught now in football, where we did have a situation where, because we had this great equipment, that the helmet became a weapon, mm-hmm. and people were launching into players and trying to get that out of the game when we learned more about safety. So rugby has been a bit of an inspiration for football.
So the name of the book is Brainwashed. If you are thinking about whether or not your kids should play in football, and maybe even
shower,
or if you know, even perhaps even more likely, if your wife is saying, "I don't want him to play football," and you want to back it up with the facts that it's not so bad. Brainwashed is the name of the book. Bad Science Behind CTE and the Plot to Destroy Football. Thank you, guys.
Thank you guys.
For your work.
This was awesome.
Yeah, thank
Appreciate
you. And thanks for setting it straight for the right reasons.
Yeah. Bam. Yeah, that's about the kids.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks,
buddy.
You know, I had a mom come up to me and say, you know, who a long time ago before I started this, and say, my son wants to play football.
Uh-oh.
What am I going to do? Mm-hmm. You know, explain to me why you let your son play. And so we had the conversation, and she comes back the next year. And he's playing football. It's great. We're a football family. We love it. And the best thing is he's showering every day now.
That's the big motivation for sports for parents. It's just to get the kids to shower for once.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks, guys. We appreciate it. The sponsor this half hour is Relief Factor. Relief Factor is something, and we've been talking a lot about sports injuries. I know Glenn has a lot of old sports injuries because he's such an athlete.
Oh my gosh, my days in the NFL before we even had helmets.
Right. But it's funny because now with small kids, you know, I'm playing, I swear, more sports now than I did when I was a kid, because you're out there all the time throwing the ball around with them.
Hurts, doesn't it?
And it winds up, it's not as easy as it was when I was a kid. It hurts.
Yeah.
A lot of inflammation comes from that, and a lot of people who go through their whole lives working their butts off to get to a point where they can play outside with their kids and enjoy life a little bit, and their grandkids deal with these big pain issues.
So here's the thing. Relief Factor, it's 100% natural, and it's the four main ingredients, and what it does is it reduces inflammation, and that's the source of most of our pain. There's not a cure for it, but there is absolute relief, and it's called Relief Factor. You take it three times a day, 100% natural, and it really works. I've been taking it for about a year now. Couldn't live like the way I was living before. Now my pain is so greatly reduced, I can handle it. It's Relief Factor.
They've got an easy way for you to try it out. It's a three-week trial pack, $19.95. Give it a shot. 70% of the people who order the three-week quick start go on to order more. It says a lot. If you want your life back, give them a try. It's a natural way to ease your pain. ReliefFactor.com is the place to go. ReliefFactor.com.
Glenn Beck.
So I want to give a plug to something that 99% of America, if not more, cannot appreciate. But I'm giving a plug because I want you to find a place like this. For the last couple of years, we brought our Christmas tree up in a place by the ranch. It's in Petersburg, Utah, and it's called Adams Acres. And we drive at least an hour to get there, and we can go get a tree any place else. But we found this place a couple of years ago, and it's run by a family, and the kids are out, the parents are there, the grandparents were there, and they're all working the farm. And it was just this idea. We wanted to do something as a family that would last, and so we decided to do a tree farm. They didn't know what they were doing, and they were like, oh, this is a lot bigger job than we thought it was. They opened it up a couple of years ago, and it is just, it's like walking into It's a Wonderful Life.
Really?
Yeah, it's just this normal, really cool family that are, the kids are so nice. I bought a 10-foot blue spruce, $60.
Oh my God.
$60.
That is not the price around the country.
Oh, I will say that. Gosh. Yeah, no, it's not. But anyway, go find a, don't go to the Home Depot or whatever. Go find a tree lot. Go find a tree farm. You know, we go out and we cut the tree down. When I say we, Rafe cuts the tree. and it's just so much better. Now, warning. The trees look smaller out on a tree farm than they do in your house.
Hmm. So you're Clark W. Griswold, so basically. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. A little bit. A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to help pick out the trees, and my wife kept saying, that's a Johnny Brad tree. That's a Johnny Brad tree. Okay. Well, yeah, it also will fit in the house. And we bought this tree, and it was a great tree, but it's not a Charlie Brown tree. And had to cut like a lot of it. Well, if we cut the back part of this off, we can put it up here next to the wall.
The last time I had a real tree, which was a few years ago, we had it, you know, get over time, it dries out a little bit. It was one of those that no matter how much water you put in, yeah, it just kept drying out. And I had to saw all the branches off to get it out of the house.
Oh my gosh.
So I was,
oh, it hurts.
It sucked. It was embarrassing. Yeah. And, you know. I'm not a scientist. I could not get it to.
So
I could not get it figured out.
I have a friend who put it into a bucket of water and put Miracle-Gro in it. Just dumped Miracle-Gro in it. It grew roots.
Really?
Yeah, grew roots. They planted it.
That's thinking, fantastic.
We should plant this thing. We're putting Miracle-Gro. I can't imagine that works, but it did for them. I'm putting a bunch of Miracle-Gro in that thing. We'll plant it, but we have to make a pact with the family that we don't cut it down again. Can you imagine? It's like the tree would be like, and then every Christmas I just heal, and every Christmas they come and cut me up again.
It's like you're fishing and you just keep pulling the same fish out of the water.
It's like, okay, come on. It's your fault. Somebody else.
It's your fault. It's a little lure. Stop going after it, you moron. It's not a real worm. Stop trying to eat it. It's a long lesson we have to learn as fish.
All right. Today on the 5 o'clock TV show, you don't want to miss it at the Blaze. It is the truth about the border. We take the truth and expose the media and those who are not telling you the truth. Bit by bit, very surgical. Today, 5 o'clock, a show you do not want to miss. The Blaze
Glenn,
TV.
Beck, Mercury.